easy to get stuck in this thing where it's okay, I want to have $1 million. And then you achieve that and you're almost a little bit depressed. What do I do now?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I guess I better kick the can down the road. Let's make it 10 million.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
Ziana McIntyre, international woman of mystery. How are you?
I am so good. And I just want to say that you perfectly pronounced my name, and that is not an easy feat. So already you're winning, sir.
Ziana McIntyre. Hello. Yeah. How are you?
Oh, everything in that range happens to me. So yes.
Same here. You travel a good bit yourself. So are you currently home or are you abroad? What are you doing?
I am in Boulder, Colorado, but you are catching me between Burning Man, which is epic, like going to another planet. And then I'm going to Hawaii tomorrow. So, yeah.
So you're part of the Burning Man crowd.
I am. Does this paint a different picture now?
How was Burning Man? And tell me about the economics of a 12-hour car ride to exit Burning Man.
I am way more cool than that. I take a bus. The bus gives you just a straight shot. So there is no waiting in line. I know all about this. This is my fifth year at Burning Man.
I saw Ray Dalio, the billionaire hedge fund manager, the titan of industry, wearing a fur coat at Burning Man. And I was talking shit about that. Burning Man for 2 weeks straight until I saw Ray Dalio there. And then I thought, this is the secret to success.
Should have been there.
Yeah. But anyways, I know that you are massive in the Airbnb space. And I want to go into that with you. We'll go into what's working, what's not working, and what was different from now in 2020.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of newbie Airbnb investors that are coming in right now. And it's a scary time. Because the underwriting is completely off. And you and I both know this. I want to talk about it. First, let's back it up a bit and talk about your origin story with this whole wacky world of short-term rentals, because you were getting into them before they were super popular, right?
Yeah, I got lucky. There's not many things in my life that I do ahead of the curve. Let's just be honest. I'm a little bit of a slow adapter. But Airbnb, I got in early and it's been a wild ride. It's been fun to see it rocket shipped over 2015 to 2019. And it's just fun to see how it's evolving. Yeah, you want to go into the origin story?
Yeah, so it was your friend was like renting out his apartment, right?
Yeah. So my friend in New York, where, you know, if you live in New York or LA, you hear about everything first. It's like the tech hub mecca. Anyway, so Airbnb, I think what the barrier to entry for a lot of people was, is that they didn't want randoms in their house. And I was already okay with that. So I was like, oh man, I could do couch surfing, but actually get paid? Score. Mm. So at that time, I was a college student. I was making like minimum wage and I had a spare room. I had a roommate who just moved out and I already had it furnished with all my stuff. And so I was like, there's no harm in trying this. If it doesn't work, I just get another roommate. It's like, I have the sheets and towels and everything. So I listed it and it did okay. It wasn't this crazy, amazing thing because it was Boulder, Colorado and not New York City. But over time, Boulder got more and more popular and Airbnb got more and more popular. So it got to be where I was renting out this other room, and then I was renting out my room and staying at people's houses. Then I eventually got more apartments and I was going between the different apartments and then ended up buying and then buying out of state. And so I started with arbitrage and have just tried every strategy since.
What was the part that really made you fall in love with the medium? Was it the cash flow? Was it the hospitality? What part was it?
Yeah. At the early days, it was the hospitality, but I'm so removed from that now that it's hard to say that's still true. I think I still dream of having a place where like my basement unit or my ADU is an Airbnb because it would be so fun to have fresh flowers and interact with the guests. In 2015, Airbnb had the Airbnb Open, which was this big conference, and they had a couple of events where they were having like awards for amazing guest stories. And I was like weeping in there because it was just like beautiful stuff that the travelers got to experience with their hosts. I want some of that magic, but now I don't have people like in my home with me. So I don't really see the travelers.
I want to hit on two different angles here, but first I want to start with 2022, starting an Airbnb and jumping into the industry now, because I think this is a great podcast episode to do because a lot of people ask about it and a lot of people are looking into it. And I really want to direct them the right way to do it as opposed to going really wacky with the numbers and then having a problem. Because what we're seeing across the country right now is interest rates are going up. Some people are getting underwater with their Airbnb purchases. And they're like, oh, I was so excited to start doing this. And now all of a sudden we've got regulations coming in. We've got legislation coming in. Interest rates going crazy. So now I'm so excited to have you on today because you've seen all of this and you make content on this and you talk to people about Airbnbs all the time. So if somebody were to make to start doing the Airbnbs in 2022, let's walk them through a journey here about what to do and what not to do. So first off, what is changing that you're seeing here in this year that people need to be looking out for?
So Avery Carl, if you guys know her short-term shop, she's gotten really popular with her vacation rental markets. And so where she buys is she buys in these markets where they've been tried and true vacation rentals for 20 years. But what we're seeing now is that doesn't necessarily protect you, right? It doesn't mean that regulations may not come in eventually, because now it was first the cities and then it was smaller towns. And then even these like remote hamlets are starting to put regulations into place. So you're just not fully sure. The second thing I don't love about that concept is that in a recession, which we're maybe in right now or working towards, I feel a little concerned about not having a backup plan. So people are buying these million-dollar properties that they're Airbnb-ing or $700,000, which is still quite a big mortgage. And it's all cute if they're rented, but when they're vacant, it's not great. And if it's in a town where nobody really lives there, there's a couple of people that work in the restaurant industry and that's it, it's a little bit scary because no one's going to pay that really high mortgage for that house if you have to rent it long.
So is that what you look for? So talk to me about the markets that you would look for right now if you were purchasing, because I'm sure that you probably still are actively purchasing. What markets are you looking for and what are some red flags to avoid when you're looking just from market demographics?
Yeah. So I like urban adjacent, right? So a lot of the urban markets, they're not allowing it anymore, or they do the thing where it has to be your primary residence. Atlanta. So I've been Boulder. Yeah. Atlanta's done that. But in Atlanta, there's towns like Tucker. You live in Atlanta, right? Tucker allows it. So like, how can you be really close to Atlanta and position yourself on the edge of Tucker, the part that's the closest to Atlanta, right? And then you've got this loophole that you can do it. And a lot of times when they go in and change the regulations, they'll grandfather the people in that are already doing it. And so that happened for us in Colorado Springs. We're one of the few with a grandfathered license. They don't let you sell with that license. So it's not a lot of competition, which is awesome. So for Denver, for example, outside of Denver, there's a couple surrounding towns that allow it. They all have their own little regulations, but maybe you can just have one property or whatnot. And those do super well. And so it's just about like knowing the intricacies. And that's why having an investor-friendly realtor is really helpful. And hopefully one that's already Airbnb-ing themselves.
Okay. So that's probably where you would start. Are you still finding these properties on the MLS? Because now I see it becoming more and more popular with these people that are going and finding these super distressed properties and essentially like Airbnb, like burring them into an Airbnb. I see that happening over and over again. So are you still active? So if you were to go look for one, would you be looking for them on the MLS or where are people finding
these? I have bought every one of my properties from the MLS. Yeah, I'm not reinventing the wheel. I think it's knowing, I like to talk about like the real estate food chain. Where I am is I come in at the place of renovated. So I'm not even doing value add. And some people do, and that's awesome. I come in at the space of renovated and I get it furnished immediately. And I know that my money is coming from this space of being furnished in shorter terms. So maybe that's a month or maybe that's under 30 days, but I'm doing the medium and short-term rentals. And that's where my cash flow comes from.
Okay, say more on that about the strategy that you have with that, because I know that some people that have come on this show, they're like, they like the month to month, or they like the traveling nurse strategy. What's your go-to pocket strategy that you're doing right now that's just kicking ass?
I'm doing more MTR. So this is like month-to-month rental, but it's everyone has their pros and cons, right? Sure. So short-term rentals, it's going to get you the most cash flow. So if you're really at the space of, I need to eke out every dollar that I can get out of my property, then short-term rental is probably going to be the one. But it comes with a lot of drawbacks. It comes with way more management, higher expenses, and then regulations that you've got to deal with. Medium term is this like perfect in the middle thing that I like, where you can still get cash flow, but you're seen as a long-term rental. So just a lot of that junk doesn't apply to you. You don't have lodging tax. You don't have to do like extra permits and stuff for the short-term rental license. You just get a long-term license and you chill. You're in this weird gray area that nobody's really looking at. And there's still money to be made in that.
Yeah. So when it comes to these months to months, is that a complete, that's a completely different type of tenant than when it comes to the short term, correct?
Yeah. Maybe there's a tiny bit of overlap, but it is a different concept. The short term, I would say the average stay is about 3 to 4 nights. And this longer term stay, whether it's a month or 3 months, you're getting more like traveling business professionals, you're getting traveling nurses, you get digital nomads. So someone like you or I could be staying in places for a month. So I've had people that say, hey, I'm in Austin this month and I'm coming to Boulder, then I go to Hawaii. And they're just like working from home, but they're in these different Airbnbs. So some people now live in Airbnbs full time and they don't have a home.
Yeah, I know. Can relate. Yeah. I'm in an Airbnb right now in Budapest. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. But what I'm doing is I'm living like 2 weeks at a time, because for me, a month in a place is just too much. And I run out of, because without social connection, it becomes, if you had friends there, it would make sense.
Yeah.
But like for me, I'm like 2 weeks, I'm good. On to the next thing. So that's what I'm currently
doing. Well, but get a cheaper rate at a month. So you need to start going to meetups and stuff so you make some friends. Everybody, Brian needs friends.
Do any of y'all want to be my friend? I'd like it. But yeah, speaking about Brian needs friends, it's 8:20 on a Friday night and I'm here talking to you. So
yeah,
that says it right there. Whatever. When you're doing the underwriting for your Airbnbs right now, what different moves are you making in your current underwriting that maybe you weren't making in the last couple of years, where it was just like going absolutely gangbusters with occupancy rates and bookings? It was insane. So what are you doing different now to make sure that you do have multiple exit strategies and you do have something that has a kind of a safety net around it, just in case it doesn't quite cash flow like you want it to?
Yeah. So what's tricky is that people were in love with this 10% down second home loan, and that was just like killing it. And then I think it was back April that they changed it, where those didn't have such a good rate anymore. So before, it used to be basically like getting a primary loan, which is about 1% less than an investment loan. And people were loving that, but you still had to use your own income. You couldn't use the income from the property to qualify. But 10% down is way better than 20% down. So that was great. Now they're wanting you not to do those loans as much. So you usually have to pay a bunch in rate buy down or points. So yeah, you might have an okay rate, but then you have to pay like $10,000, which sort of screws you up on the lesser down payment, right? So what we're finding now is that people can sometimes do a 15% down, but those 10% down ones are just not as good.
Got it.
So that kind of sucks. What I have seen people do is some people that are digital nomads like you and I've seen them do an Airbnb as a primary. So, you know, gray area, but they go and they live in it for a little while, say it's their primary, and then they continue living around the world. And so they still get that lower rate and they can put even 3 to 5% down. Okay. Not everybody's going to do that. Otherwise, I would look for 10% down products, 15% down products. I am not as worried about having a high interest rate. I think interest rates are going to just change over the years. If you look at a 10-year horizon, they go up and down, can refi at some point. Don't really worry about that. Worry about what your mortgage is going to be every month and that those numbers still work for you. And I think people get too worried about, oh, I just want it to be 0.25 less. So who cares?
Yeah, marry the cash flow.
To focus on.
Marry the cash flow, date the rate.
Yeah. Great. Sure. But what I don't like to do is throw money away to points. So if you have to buy down rates or there's some kind of fee, I don't like that as much. So I just try to see where I'm going to be best suited. But yeah, I try not to put down too much money if I can help it. And sometimes you can't help it. When you buy condos, which I end up in a lot, you have to do 20% down usually. So it's not always perfect.
And I'm assuming these are condos that are non-HOA, or are you buying with HOA?
I buy with HOA. So if I'm doing, yeah. So if I'm doing medium-term rentals, what I like are the 1 and 2 bedroom units. I like them smaller because generally for month to month, I feel like people are either traveling with themselves or maybe one partner. Sometimes traveling nurses have a kid, something like that. But if I'm going to have a 3 or 4 bedroom, how many people are traveling in a group like that month to month? It seems just like the tenant pool is going to be harder.
Sure.
So while I do own 1 bedroom houses, there's not that many of them. So yeah, we end up in condos and the numbers still work.
And you haven't had any issues with HOAs? Because that's been like a nightmare in Atlanta. Like it's just like a hell on earth.
So if you're doing short term, sometimes your HOA is not going to like that. If you do medium term, what you need to find out at the beginning, because I'm a realtor, so I know these things, is that you find out if they have any kind of restrictions on their rental time, their term or whatever. Sometimes they'll say it's got to be minimum a month, 3 months, 6 months. Sometimes they don't say anything. Sometimes they say a year, but usually they just want it to be minimum a month. They're just keeping the short-term rentals at bay. And so that's perfect for us. And so we just stay within that.
Okay, cool. So if you are going to purchase within an HOA, do the month to month instead of the short term. Do the MTR instead of the STR.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. So are you, when you're underwriting for the occupancy rates, I've heard a lot of people say to that what they're doing, the advice that they're giving is that they're underwriting for a 2019 or a 2018 occupancy level as opposed to a 20 or a 21. Are you doing the same thing or what are you doing when you're looking
at
the cash flow?
Smart. I am not looking at that. And then maybe I should be. Sometimes I learn things. But basically, I look at AirDNA, and AirDNA is doing it by quarter. So that's pretty recent. And I feel like that's pretty safe. And then I'm not so worried about the occupancy. So some towns you'll see 70% or more, which is fantastic. But other towns you'll see 50% or 45%. It's not about that. It's about how much are they getting in that 50% of time. If you're making like $1,000 a night, yeah, maybe you don't need to rent it 90% of the time. And then it's less hard on the house. So I wouldn't be so worried about that, but I want to make sure that the average is going to equal the income that I need to make. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So that actually leads perfectly into my next question, which is what price point do you target? Because I've had people on here that do the ultra, like the luxury high-end short-term rentals. And I've had people that are doing like destination themed short-term rentals where they're all like bear themed and different cabin and wooded areas. And I've got people on here with every single different niche and pocket that you can find. So I'm curious about yours. Hey guys, what's up? It's Brian. I need your help. Just 1 second and the show's going to continue. But here's what I need. There are two ways that people find new podcasts to listen to. One is through word of mouth and the other is through ratings and reviews. My one ask of you guys is if you are finding value in this episode today, right now, please go and leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Subscribe if you haven't already and send this episode to 1 or 2 people that you think would get value from it. Thanks in advance and let's get back to the episode.
That's really interesting. I think what I would love is to be at this really high-end level, and it scares the crap out of me. Getting a mortgage where you're like, $10,000-$15,000 a month. Like if that doesn't work, it's just a lot. So I know these people are in a space where they're making that in a week, but it's just hard to wrap my head around. So that scares me. I tend to buy in the smaller range. I have properties between 100 to 700, but most of them are in this 300K range. And that's probably just limited beliefs and glass ceiling. I think we find what we feel comfortable with and then we grow. But I often am buying something where it makes me uncomfortable and I've just got to adjust to that. So I don't know if there's a perfect answer for that.
Yeah, it's just, I've been curious as I've been watching because I'm just like, okay, like, what is the strategy here? Do you want to be the ultra high-end one that's got all the different bells and whistles? But if you are the ultra high-end one, and like, I've had Rachel Gainsborough and all of them on the show, and I even asked them, I'm like, okay, so I buy B-class for my actual houses, for my full-time rentals, long-term rentals. And I buy B-class because if you are in a recession, the first thing that happens is the A-class tenants go down to B-class. And then, so then you have a bit of a trickle there, and it's a nice stable ecosystem. But I'm curious, and this is a good question for you because you're way more in this world than I am. I'm curious about with what is happening. So the stock market went crazy. We're in some type of recession. Like, we can all just generally agree the economy is not looking great. We can all agree on that. We can agree on that. So normally there's a delay in the real estate reaction. The appreciation's already slowed down, which I'm actually excited about. That's what the Fed was trying to do. But now I'm wondering, will we see that impact in the short-term rental space where whenever people do get hit, it's going to be, oh, I'm not going to buy that luxury short-term rental. I'm going to go down to that mid-class Airbnb. Or do you think it's not going to be really impacted as much because of changes in trends? Because now I feel like people would rather do the experiences and spend money on experiences instead of spending money on things after the pandemic. There's a lot of
I think that was true. That was true in like 2021. I think people were really about the experience stays and the rural stays. And that's why you were seeing all these like tree houses and things coming up. Now I think people are a little bit more getting back into the urban markets because they're doing the necessary travel. People are just like a little unsure what's happening, but they still want to go visit their friends and their family members. And so, okay, we're going to go to this city because we have to go see somebody. So that's what I'm feeling the most comfortable with. I get that if we're in a long recession, people are going to be doing more drive-to destinations instead of flying. They're not going to go to Mexico and Hawaii. They're going to drive down to Florida. Okay, great. That's what the short-term shops model is. But I think that in the interim, and I don't know how long this weird holding pattern is going to be, people are just doing those necessary trips. But I want to say something else because I got to reflect while you were talking for a long time. And I realized
I'll let you drink your coffee. I'll let you think. I'll let you go to the bathroom.
I got to like process.
There we go.
I realized that my strategy tends to be that I find a cheap pocket, maybe an undervalued pocket of a town, and I find a nice renovated unit in it. So one that looks really good, but it's on the edge of something that could be gaining in value, and then buy that. So yeah, I tend to find something that I think it's a little bit cheap, but I can rent it for a lot if I furnish it well. So that's the strategy that I've seen myself doing again and again.
And so right now, let's go into what your portfolio currently looks like and then what you're trying to take it to.
About 12 units. I have 12 units, but they're in four states and it's just like bonanza. I think what's funny is that a lot of people buy in one town. They like get to know it and they're like, sweet, I know exactly what I'm looking for. When that comes on the market, I'm just going to buy it. And that makes a great amount of sense in theory, but like I have not done that. So
why have you not done that? Tell me more. The people want to know.
Okay. I started in Boulder, Colorado, because it's where I lived. Okay. So I had a unit and then bought a unit that was very similar that I had been arbitraging because I was like, okay, I know all these numbers. And I looked at the other one, it was cheaper. And I was like, perfect. That's going to work. Then after that, I was like, Boulder's too expensive. I can't keep doing this. So I went to St. Louis, and that's a much cheaper market, and just went crazy there. So I had four places and now only have one. I'm like getting out of that market. Then, I just buy where I find opportunity. So it is a little bit crazy, but I have a few in like middle Florida, Ocala. I have a Panama City Beach rental. I've got one kind of outside of Seattle on the Sound up in Washington State. And then a couple around Colorado. I've got two Boulder, one Denver, one Colorado Springs.
Nice. So. We're all accounted for.
Yeah. Good. I got just lots of sure. friends. Yeah. Whatever.
That's awesome. So right now, do you also have a management arm to this?
Oh, I used to, but that is the worst part of the job. So I'm not doing that anymore.
Tell me more. Let's talk about that. Because some people are like, oh, I want to go into Airbnb management. I want to do all this. Talk us out of it.
Sure. You could do it for a short period of time. I don't know. Maybe some people are just better at systems than I am. What I learned is that I would get an assistant and then all the bad news rolled at the top. They could handle all of the in between and they would hear the good things and see the reviews. But anytime anything escalated to me, it was just terrible. And so all I got was just all the bad stuff. And I was like, this is not fun. So I stopped doing it. But at that time, I had managed 60 rentals in 5 countries. So I learned to be all over the place with it. And so that's why it's easy for me to buy in different places. Cause I'm like, oh yeah, I just manage from afar.
Yeah. It's hilarious because whenever I'm like getting a place that's like super nice, like the place I'm in Budapest right now is super nice and just perfect for exactly what you need. And I was just like, oh, this person's a professional host for sure. And I go look at her property. She has 37 properties on Airbnb. And I'm like, I almost want to message her and be like, hey, look, so I run this American podcast. Like,
you want to be on the show?
You want to be on the show and talk about the Hungarian rental market?
You could. That's fine.
So you've got 12 right now. What's the cash flow looking like on 12 Airbnbs that you're running? And are these, do you have these in-house or are these outsourced for their management because you hated doing it?
No, so I have an assistant. So she does my management and then I just don't do other people's management anymore because it was just too much.
Got it.
And I have short, medium, and long-term. So 12 units across, 9 actual properties. And my cash flow, I think we're at like $9,500, something like that. The reason is I have a quad that I gave to my nephews. It's their college fund. And so I don't really track that money as much. I think it's like $1,300 that comes off of that quad, but that's like theirs. So
talk more about that because I know Brandon does something like that for his kids. And he was on the show and he talked about that. Talk about doing the college
one. Totally just stole Brandon's idea.
Good. Do it. He doesn't deserve all the ideas. Take them.
So I saw that he did that. And then when my nephews were born, I'm not intending to have children. And my sister, they just live like a pretty frugal life. They live in a tiny home and they're in Maui and they're just not as, I don't know, entrepreneurial and crazy as I am. So I was like, this would be cool. If the kids want to go to college, I could just buy them a quad now. In 20 years, it'd be mostly paid off. It'll probably appreciate a ton. We can just sell it or they can use the money now for like private school or whatever. So it kicks off, I think around $1,300 a month and they use that for nanny, daycare, whatever. And they're stoked. And meanwhile, it is appreciated. I got it 2 years ago. It's appreciated like 100, 150. So yeah, it's doing its job.
There you go. So I heard you say that they're pretty frugal, but not you. You're an entrepreneur. So let's pivot here. Let's pivot here. No, hold on a second.
Okay.
Hold on a second. I got you for a second.
All right.
What are your ideas on financial independence, retire early?
Yeah. So I considered myself FI at the first time when I was 28. So I got to do that in 2 years with Airbnb, which is dope. Yeah. And then I had different goals, right? So first it was just, can I cover my expenses? And I'm like, can I hit $1 million? Yeah. And then all the things continually change. So my expenses do go up as my lifestyle goes up. So I don't think I'll ever stop working, but I have more expenses than I used to. And I think it's probably because I'm also a real estate agent. It's a spendy job.
Yeah, a little bit to a degree.
Can't be.
So my whole thing that I talk to people about on this show and around is like getting enough passive income to have passionate income. Like that's the goal.
Explain that to me.
It's in the trademark process. It's serious. We're serious over here. But it's funny. I say this because I posted in some financial independence, retire early, like Facebook groups. And what I do is I'll post my picture of me like in Greece and I'll say, hey guys, like I hit financial freedom. I'm traveling around the world and everyone goes, oh my God, this is awesome. And then I start getting all these hate messages, right?
Ooh.
Because they're like
throwing shade.
They're like, you're still working. You're not FI. You're working. You still produce income. I'm like, what are you talking about? I was like, I travel around the world full time podcasting, and now that has become my job. I was like, isn't that what we're aiming for? So it's funny because that's what I think it's for. I think that The reason that you get the passive income, the reason that you do your short-term rentals so that you can get the $9,000 is that you choose to do the work that you want to do instead of having to do work that you have to do. And then you can have something.
I got a little tweak for you. So this is mine. Mine is different, but I got this. I got a hit at Burning Man. You get messages. Burning Man's a little spiritual place. We're coming back to it. But when I was there, I realized that so much of my life has been focused on the financial and the vocational parts of my life, where those are like overdeveloped. And now I'm in my mid-30s and I'm like, I want to be more spiritual. I want to be more creative. I want to do all these other things. And what I realized there is that my why has shifted into helping people figure out their finances so that they can grow as humans. Because I think like you can't work on yourself spiritually. You can't fully develop if you're focused on surviving. And we waste our time doing 40 years of surviving. Fuck that. Let's get them out of that.
All right. Now we're having ourselves a podcast episode. Now we're getting past it. Welcome to the Action Academy. Okay, here we go. All right. I agree with you. Let's talk about this because Naval Ravikant, have you seen him on Twitter or seen anything he's posted?
I don't tweet. So no, tell me.
So Naval Ravikant tweeted this thing. He tweeted this whole list of stuff where it was like how to get rich without getting lucky. And he's just like this philosopher, angel investor dude. He's freaking awesome. And he did a tweet where he was like, I want to get everyone ridiculously wealthy so that they can see that the answer is not riches to happiness. Yeah. But he's let's get everyone rich first so that they can realize it's not the answer. Because if you're spending all of your time, energy, and effort on survival, and that's all you're thinking about is, okay, how do I pay this? How do I pay this mortgage? How do I pay this car note? How do I pay this? And that's all your brain is thinking about. There's no way that you're going to be able to do any of the internal work. So talk more about that with your journey.
So I had this conversation yesterday. So this is good timing. But what I was talking about to this person, an accountability group that focuses on 8 areas of life and not just finances. Perfect. But I was saying it's easy to get stuck in this thing where it's, okay, I want to have $1 million. And then you achieve that and you're almost a little bit depressed. What do I do now?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I guess I better kick the can down the road. Let's make it 10 million. And so I have something to do. And it's easy to measure these goals of 10 properties or 10 million because they're just easy round numbers. But what he told me is that it's not what you have, it's how you feel. And that was like a light bulb for me. I was like, oh my God, if it's only how I feel, I could literally wake up every morning, do a little meditation. How am I feeling now? How do I want to feel? And then go after that. And that's it. I could be satisfied there and I don't have to do all this other shit. Yeah, I think I've worn myself down. I get really exhausted just chasing these things to chase them that don't mean anything anymore.
All right, people. All right, ladies and gentlemen, listening to the podcast. You guys listen now. You guys listen now. It's not just one person. It's not just two people. It's 10 people now have come on the show and had the same realization. I had a friend, Chad Corbett. So if you guys have not listened to Chad's episode, you need to go back and listen to it. I think it was like Feelings Before Freedom. And this guy had an 8-figure real estate business. And he was running 3 different arms. He had a mortgage part, a lending part, a real estate brokerage. He had all the different arms that you're supposed to make, making 8 figures a year. And he finally was just like, okay, how do I want to feel? Because he got the same coaching that you did and he had the same realization. Yeah. And his feeling that he wanted was relaxed. Yeah. And he said, none of this shit is making me relaxed. So the next day he woke up in the morning.
Burned it down.
And he shut down 3 businesses in one day.
Yeah.
He shut them all down. And then he started an online education business that now is generating $1 million every 6 months. Totally. And now he's relaxed while he does it.
Yeah.
So that's my new thing is like now I'm rewriting my vivid vision for this next run. And I've got my vivid vision in there. So I've got how I want to feel. And I've got like an acronym. It's FREE. It's financially abundant, ready to fly, energized, and excited. That's how I want to feel every day.
And the ready to, I like that.
Yeah. And the ready to fly part is because at any given point, like I'm going to have my business designed to where at any moment I want to be within a 1 week notice of being wherever I want to be. So if you tell me, hey, we're doing this next week at any given point in my business, I'm going to say, okay, cool. Like next Tuesday. Okay, cool. Let me move some things around. I'll be there next Tuesday. I'll fly out. That's all I want to do.
Yeah. Cool. I love that. And I love that you've got it so figured out that you have an acronym. So you definitely
step your game up.
Are on the right path.
Step your game up, Z Money. What are you doing?
That's right.
So what is next? So what is next on your path to enlightenment and riches and success and fulfillment and significance? What are you doing?
So I just co-authored a book that's coming out. It depends when this airs, but in November for Bigger Pockets, that is all on the medium to rental strategy. So it's called 30 Day Stay, The Investor's Guide to Mastering the Medium Term Rental. So I'm excited about the book, and it has brought up a lot of, do I take this big surge of opportunity and create a bunch of stuff, or do I not? And I'm at this place where it's like, man, I could build $1 million group coaching business, but I don't think I want to. And like that I think is hard for people in the real estate world to understand, because I am five first. I'm in the financial independence world where it is about enough, and it is about our family and our friends and our lifestyle first. So yeah, I don't want to do something that's just going to make me more busy to make me more busy, or make me more money when I already have enough money. I want to have a TV show. I think that'd be fun as hell. But other than that, I don't know. I'm chilling, man.
So tell me more. So if you could wave a magic wand, if you could wave a wand and fast forward a couple of years, like what would a perfect week in the life of Ziana look like?
I like a lot of travel. I still do a lot of that. So we travel about 6 months a year, and we do slow travel. So like we're going to Hawaii, we go for a month. I don't like bopping around as much. It's just complicated.
Slow mads.
Yeah, slow mads. So I'd love, at least for a season, it'd be really fun to have a show where I was getting made up, because I don't like to do myself. But if someone wants to land me, that sounds amazing. And then I love the idea of doing something where I'm having these really rich conversations with people like you. Oh. If you guys listen to our podcast, it's good, but I wish it was deeper. And that's fine. It's Craig and I. And it's not just what?
Wish it was deeper. We not go deep enough? Let's go.
It depends on the person, right? But I think our format doesn't allow for as much depth. If you've seen something like David Letterman's, like My Guest Needs No Introduction, that show, they do so much research and background on their guests that it is incredibly rich. And I want that.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So where else can people find you?
Yeah. So Instagram's the easiest, but I do lots of the socials. But yeah, I answer all my DMs. So find me at Ziana McIntyre.
There you go. And then we will have that spelled out in the title and also in the show notes, people.
Yes.
And if you mispronounce her name, she will punch you in the throat. Sorry.
That's right.
You do not want a throat punch. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been awesome. This will be going out in October. So that will be perfect timing for the book release. Everybody go get the book. She knows what the heck she's talking about, and she's proved it today. And we got a little bit deep. We got into it a little bit. I love it. And thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. This has been Brian and Ziana with the Action Academy Podcast, signing off.